Joining us on the line right now from The Athletic is Scott Wheeler. And Scott, man, you talk about a guy who just put together a monster effort for The Athletic, ranking the top 50 drafted prospects right now in the NHL. And Scott joins us here on the line this morning. Scott, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Are your fingers hurting from the keyboard? Man, this is a long monster here that you put together.
Yeah, it's one of those pieces that's a little bit of a labor of love, a year in the making. So it's nice to finally have it out in the world. I'm always anxious in the sort of days leading up to it as to how it will be perceived. It's along with my top 100 draft eligible prospects ranking that I release every year. It's probably my sort of one of two biggest projects of every hockey season. So it feels good when it's finally out there and when I can finally hit send on the tweet and send it off into the internet, and then from there it's not up to me how it's perceived.
Well, how has it been? Because we'll get into some of the rankings in a bit, but what was the initial reaction from the hardcore hockey fans as to where you felt that the best prospects are and how you rank them?
It's always a mixed bag. On one hand, you get a lot of people who question the ability of someone like me to put together a list like this and to be able to watch and track all of these players. Obviously, it's my full-time job, and I have a travel budget dedicated to it, and I put in hundreds and hundreds of hours a year in terms of putting this one project together. So there's that part of it, and some of that's understood. It's very difficult to watch the hundreds of kids that you have to watch over the course of a hockey season and truly get a proper sense for where everyone's at, where everyone's trending, how they've progressed relative to their peers, all of that. So it's not an easy science. It's a very hard thing to do and to do well. Mistakes happen, and I've got to be cognizant of that in all of the work that I do and sort of be upfront and vocal about where my biases might be, where the holes in my viewings might be, all of those things. So that's one part of it. And then on the other part of it, you've got fan bases that are very much attached to their prospects and that don't have the sort of awareness of the league-wide talent in terms of the top 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old players in the world. And that creates a little bit of tunnel vision, I think, from some fan bases in terms of why is my guy not ranked where I thought he was going to be ranked and that kind of a thing. So there's a give and take. I have to be cognizant of the work that I do and where some of my holes might be, and I try to remind fans that there are 31 teams who have two or three excellent prospects. So they're not alone in having the only good players in the world, and that can be a little bit of a debate that flares up every year too. But it's all in good fun, and it's an interesting project and one that I really enjoy putting together and is a real favorite of mine, and yesterday was no different.
Scott, if I can read between the lines, Scott Wheeler from The Athletic with us here on Sportsnet 650. It sounds like you've heard from Canucks Twitter.
I have heard from Canucks Twitter. They were among the fan bases that I did hear from yesterday, and that's okay.
So you've got, so to explain, to just give people a sense who maybe haven't seen the article yet, you've got at number 24, Niles Höglander, and then at 25, you got Vasily Podkolzin. You know, the genuine sense here in this market is that Podkolzin could step in and play now, and the organization, executives in the front office have essentially said that, and Höglander obviously has wowed a lot of people with what he did at the World Juniors and his upside. But why so far down, in your opinion? Why aren't they higher? Come on, man. Why aren't they higher?
Yeah, well, I think there are reasons for both of them that I have reservations about their games and the way that they're trending and their ultimate projection. But I would caution that by saying that 25th and 24th overall in terms of the world of prospects means that you have two prospects in your organization that are among the top 31. So if every team gets one prospect in that range, you've got two, and that's not a bad thing. These are two of the, you exclude the defensemen, and suddenly these are two of the top 15 or so forward prospects on the planet, and that is a very good thing. That speaks very highly of them, not lowly of them. So I would always start with that. These are two tremendous prospects, and me having them maybe a little bit lower than some other evaluators in the public or even in the private sphere and some of the scouts that I talk to isn't indicative of me believing that they aren't going to make it or that they aren't going to even be impact players. I think both of them have an opportunity to do that. I've always been a slightly higher on Nils. Nils was actually 18th in my draft eligible ranking before last year's draft, while Vasily was 19th. And I believe that Nils was a value pick where he landed at the time, and that Podkolzin was maybe a tiny bit high for me at the time. And I think that's about where I am on both of them today. They both had different years. Pod Colson had an excellent second half, particularly into the playoffs, where he played a prominent role before the shutdown happened in the KHL. And Höglander obviously had a little bit of an up and down year where ice time was harder to come by, and he bounced around a little bit in the lineup, and his production came in waves, and he was brilliant at the World Juniors before he was suspended, and all of those things came into play. I'm ultimately a little bit higher on Nils, if only because he has a little bit higher of a ceiling for me. His floor is probably lower. I think there's more of a risk in a player like Nils that he doesn't make it or that he doesn't reach his potential than in a player like Vasily, whose game is kind of built for the North American style already and built for the pro level in terms of his strength on the puck and just the way that he's physically mature. But Nils' ability that stands out to me is really his ability to stop and start. He can change directions along the wall, and that limits some of the concerns that you might have about a 5'9 winger. So that's really exciting for me. And then with Vasily, the reason I'm probably a little bit lower on him than most is I think he relies a little bit too much on instinct out there. He's got some creativity to his game, and he can definitely beat players one-on-one, and he's got excellent puck skill, and we all saw it internationally a couple of years ago, and we've all seen it in spurts in Russia domestically, and he's a fabulous sort of north-south player. But I think with Vasily, what you see is what you get. I don't think he's got the chance to take the upward trajectory that some of those other prospects in that range have. He's going to be a north-south player. He's going to be physical. He's going to play to the front of the net. He's strong on the puck. But I think he can get lost out there, and I think his brain can sort of get lost out there at times. So that's the reason, ultimately, that I've been a little bit lower on him. I think he sees a play, and he wants to make the available play that he sees, and I think he can get a little tunnel vision out there, and that some problems can flare up in terms of his ability to really get his game to the next level. I think he's going to be an impact middle six forward. I just have doubts about whether or not he's going to be able to be an impact first line forward. So that ultimately kept him out of that top 20 range where I see forwards who in that range that have that kind of upside.
Scott, I mean, this is obviously your job. You give, you know, an in-depth recap of each player, but what is your process? I mean, you can only watch so many games. You only have so much time. You said scouts you're talking to. So what are your avenues of information for you to come up with your list?
Oh, there are a few. The first one is the data that's available in the public sphere. Certainly, data plays a huge role in everything that I do these days, on top of all the live viewings and on-tape viewings that I watch. For someone like Vasily in the KHL now produces excellent data. All of the KHL Liga and SHL in Europe now produce time on ice data. They produce possession numbers like we see in the NHL in terms of PDO and Corsi and shot metrics and all of that. So I rely heavily on that. We have much worse access to data in North America in terms of what the CHL and the AHL and the NCAA offer us. They don't offer us possession metrics. They don't offer us, unfortunately, time on ice data, which would go a long way in terms of amplifying some of the things that I'm seeing on the ice when I watch a player. And then I rely certainly on other people in the industry in terms of talking to scouts, talking to coaches, talking to the general managers of these kids in the junior hockey leagues in Canada, staying on top of them, talking to their agents. All of that is a part of my daily work. And then the be-all and end-all is watching these kids play. I make trips to all of the major international tournaments. I'm in Traverse City for the Prospect Tournament every year. I'm at U18 Worlds and the World Juniors and the World Junior A Challenge and all of those sort of major events on the Prospect calendar. I make a couple of trips every year down to the United States, normally one trip to Boston and one trip to Minnesota to watch a lot of the NCAA kids. I've got the OHL in my backyard, so I spend a lot of time watching the OHL and the QMJHL through Gatineau because Ottawa isn't that far from here, that kind of a thing. And then ultimately at the end of the year, when push comes to shove and when hockey is over, I spend normally 2 or 3 days out of my 5-day work week reviewing tape and watching these kids play online and watching these kids play on video and going over their shifts and sort of dissecting them that way. So it's definitely a process, and even in doing all that and in having it as my full-time job and in being lucky enough to have a travel budget for it, I still can't watch the sort of 400, 500 kids as closely as I should probably hope to if I'm going to be evaluating them all on a regular basis. So it's virtually impossible to do it on the scale that it needs to be done, but you give it your best effort and you go from there and you try to acknowledge where some of your holes might be.
Well, you know what? You certainly create the discussion as well in different hockey markets, and it's nice to just talk some hockey. So you've got Dylan Cousins number one on your list. I thought it was really interesting to see at 4 and 5, Alex Newhook, who I think a lot of people here on this side of the world were keeping tabs on when he was playing in the BCHL with Victoria, and to see how much his stock has shot up, obviously, in your eyes. But you've got Bowen Byram at number 5, where it looked like, you know, Byram kind of had a tough start first half of the season when he came back to Vancouver after the thought, well, would he possibly stick with the Avs? But you're still pretty high on Byram. Give me a quick glance before we wrap things up on Newhook and Byram.
Yeah, Byram's fascinating to me. He ended up as the sort of number one D prospect on my list. And one of the interesting things about putting this list together this year was that there were no clear-cut sort of favorites for number one. I'm not fully confident in having Dylan Cousins at the top, and I'm not fully confident in having Bowen Byram as the clear-cut number one D. And that has existed in stark contrast to the way that I've put this list together in the last 4 or 5 years of doing this list, particularly at The Athletic, in just that last year it was easy. You had Jack Hughes, you had Kaapo Kakko, you had Cale Makar, you had Quinn Hughes. Those four players were, you could slot them in any order you'd like at the top four, but they were always going to be the top four, and there wasn't that clarity this year. So Byram's interesting because I think he's got a real case for number one on this list, despite the fact that he was at number 5 for me. He's had a little bit of an up and down year. You're right. I thought he was excellent at the World Juniors, despite the fact that he had to play a reduced role due to an illness. And he just had, he slowly began to get back to that sort of overwhelmingly dominant defenseman that he was in the back half of last season into the draft. In the WHL, like he's one of those players who you see him at the front of the net, and yet he's not out of position. You'll see him sort of go to the back door to try and create a scoring chance. You'll see him carry the puck below the offensive zone goal line. He's the kind of player who takes those kinds of risks, but does a really good job through his skating and both through his timing of those decisions in terms of correcting back the other way, getting back in position, being physical on the puck along the wall to not give up on those battles, even though he's a defenseman. And just sort of creating, constantly creating havoc in the offensive zone and in transition as a sort of neutral zone carrier and a primary carrying option. So he's a really exciting player. He's got some warts defensively. He can get lost out there a little bit. He can get standing still and looking around and being a little bit lackadaisical. But in terms of the offensive package and the tools that he has to correct some of those deficiencies defensively, he ended up as kind of the, if not clear number one defenseman, then pretty close for me.
And then quickly, Newhook's the one guy I got in the car to make sure I could see him play in the BC Hockey League. It just quickly, Scott, seems like he just gets better with the level of competition and adjusts.
Yeah, Newhook is electric. He's a brilliant skater, a brilliant athlete, one of the better skaters on the planet. He's immediately going to be a sort of impact transition player in the NHL, the kind of player who can turn defenders around and create those partial breakaways that create goals in a split second. But he's also, despite being a quote-unquote smaller player, just one of those kids who's an ox on the puck. Players bounce off of him. He's physically built through his lower half in terms of that low center of gravity that you like to see in a player who's a little bit smaller, a lot like the Sidney Crosbys of the world in terms of that, just sort of the Martin St. Louis, the thickness that you want in a player who's maybe a little bit shorter, per se. So he's just a brilliant player. He's got a really deceptive release. I think that often gets lost in evaluation of his game. He's a great little finisher around the sort of high danger areas in the offensive zone. But he's also crafty. He'll throw a pass behind his back. He'll create a pass against the grain from below the goal line. So there's just a ton that I like about Newhook. I did a big video review of him for The Athletic for our Colorado site after the season had concluded to really go over what allowed him to have one of the best seasons in college hockey this season and why those skills specifically should translate to the NHL level. Because he's just one of those players who, with the skating and the strength that he has on the puck and his ability to make plays at top speed, has always just screamed NHL upside to me. And I was shocked when he wasn't on team. I know Team Canada won the World Juniors, but I was still shocked when he wasn't on that team this year. And he's just the complete package, and I'm a big fan of his game. So he's going to be a star, and Colorado's very, very lucky to land him where they did in the draft a year ago.
Scott, we're just up against the clock, but I got to throw out, I couldn't find Ole Olevi's name on that top 50.
Yeah, he was a tough one for me, just given everything that he's been through. I just struggled to slot him confidently in that sort of top 50 range. I was a decent proponent of his in his draft year and in many of the sort of various prospect rankings that I've done since then. And I still think he has the potential to be a second pairing guy. I still think he's smooth enough and confident enough and certainly poised enough. He's one of those kids who just kind of sees through pressure when bodies are coming at him. It's like they're not even there. So he's got the poise. He's got that sort of cerebral nature that you want in a modern possession driving defenseman in today's game. But he still needs to get a little bit quicker. He still needs to be a little bit more assertive offensively and sort of regain some of the confidence that we saw in his junior days. And ultimately, he still needs an opportunity, and he needs to take advantage of that opportunity when it comes. So he's probably certainly in a top 100 and probably maybe even in a top 75 for me, but I just struggled getting him into that top 50.
He believes, thanks for this. James. He believes in Ole.
There's still hope for Ole yet. Yes, exactly. Hey, Scott, thank you so much for this. I appreciate the discussion. Nice to talk some hockey, and I'm sure you'll continue to hear it from fans all across the 31 cities in the National Hockey League. So thank you for taking the time with us.
Yep, thanks for having me, and it comes with the territory, so I'm okay with it.
Fair enough.